Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys, joined again by Perry Bean, John Bollinger for our gig rundown palooza. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
Good, hanging in there.
Great.
Yeah, John, new glasses, first time for you?
Yeah. You know, I've been doing the reader thing for a while and finally had to get like grown-up glasses. So, I don't know, it's a real weird adjustment.
What's the learning curve in terms of actually being able to see now?
Well, I can read now, which is, I like that. Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing.
Sure, it makes driving a little easier.
I'm about the same. Yeah, I'm about the same. But the reading thing, that's huge.
Huge yeah. Perk.
Yeah.
Before we get any further, I forget sometimes to include this, is that if you guys ever want to ask us questions or have us answer questions that you might have had for us over the years of doing content for y'all to enjoy, throw them in the comments and we'll answer them next time.
Oh, I love that.
But without further ado, let's roll into our rig rundowns. You guys each did a cool one. You hosted one with Sammy Bowler, and you did one we just put up this morning with Extreme.
Yeah.
You know, Betancourt.
Right.
Who wants to jump first?
How about it?
Oh, yeah, okay. I was really excited about it because, I mean, Nuno, man, it's funny. I was a camp counselor on, the Rock, you know.
Oh, one of those rock
kids
things?
Rock camps.
Yeah.
Like people pay to come play with like a few rock stars.
The Rock and Roll Kids Camp or something?
Not kids camp. It was
Rock, you know, whatever it is. Anyway.
But they came to Nashville. There's like one in L.A.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a really fun deal. And Nuno was one of the other camp counselors. But Nuno just showed up, played, you know, with everybody and then left. But God, man, he is. So he made such an impression. I was looking forward to seeing him again because he's an incredible player. But also, the guy might be immortal. We're roughly the same age.
He looks great.
He might be immortal. Let's check back in 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And if he's still playing guitar.
Yeah, and looks like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was he's such an incredible player. I mean, when you hear him do Bumblebee, I was really hoping he would do it on the rundown. He did not, sadly, but he's an incredible player and Pat Badger had some great stories.
He was a guy I did not expect to enjoy so much because I got me and Jared, who's filming today, we filmed that one with you.
Yeah.
And that one, he was so lovable.
Yeah.
And the stories he had about those basses.
He's such a sweet man.
Yeah.
That was my takeaway from that edit. It was that, oh man, Pat Badger seems like a guy you want on your side. He's like the sweetest, nicest guy.
I
loved his accent.
Yeah.
It reminds me of home. I just love it.
Right, right. Yeah. I love the fact that like almost 40 years ago, Nuno walked into the music store where Pat was working and forged his friendship, and then, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah.
So
it was just kind of beautiful to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it might have been a first where we had the artist being showcased or their gear being showcased crash the rundown. So if you watch it, you'll see Nuno, or the rundown starts with his tech, John Thayer, who's great and very informative. But as we go into it, Nuno crashes
your
it.
Shows.
So,
Oh, Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp.
Uh-oh. That's what it was. Yeah.
Anyway, it was great. It was actually a really fun experience. So,
we'll check that out because I think those are still happening.
Oh yeah.
Maybe one of these you'll be the marquee star that they'll have.
Oh no, I like it. I like the obscurity, to and I don't deserve to be the marquee star. I like it right to the side.
You got your lane.
Yeah, I got my lane. I like my lane.
You had Sammy Bowler.
Sammy is awesome. If you guys are not hip to Sammy, you should check it out. He, you know, I feel like there are a million guys that do the shred thing and they do it great.
Yeah.
Sammy found a lane that is so different. He can do that shred thing, sure, but you know, he's a candy rat recording artist. He focuses on kind of modern fingerstyle, but he does it with electric, which is beautiful. So it almost, some of his stuff almost sounds like neoclassical in the sense of like a harpsichord or something, because he's playing like 10 things at the, at the same time, and then he can just turn around and
he can shred too.
Shred, you know. So his music is really, really interesting. He does his last album was, you know, instrumental. But it's just, it's cool, you know. I listen to it sometimes. It's just, I feel as emotional about it as I would like a song with great lyrics, you know. Like, and those guys, I feel like those solo fingerstyle acoustic dudes, man, their phrasings are always so beautiful and strange and just different than what we're used to hearing, you know.
Right.
So to me, I love all that candy rat stuff, you know. And and Sammy's no exception. That guy's great.
And he stands out in their catalog or their artist roster because it started with the friendship of the owner, I can't remember his name, and Andy McKee.
Right.
A lot of that stuff is acoustic style.
Right.
Almost,
Sammy's brings the firepower.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Under Watt Friedman.
Right. You know, they've been a label now for quite some time. you know, over 20 years or something like that. But they now have like over 50 artists on their roster. And I think Sammy was one of the, probably one of the better known electric players in that lineup.
Yeah, that's what I love about that label. It starts with how I discovered, and they're all like just like people you'd see on YouTube or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Andy McKee, Antoine
and
Dufour.
Guys that were playing alone in their home, and they're incredible. And thanks to the, you know, our online world, you can actually see them. Whereas before, I think they would just stay, nobody would hear that stuff.
Yeah.
Right, right. I guess the last thing I'll say about Sammy is, like, beyond the fact that he is just such an incredible talent, man, what a humble guy. Yeah. And that always stokes me out, you know, when you're that good at something and you're still that humble.
Yeah.
Good look.
And he pops up in Nashville quite a bit.
He's here all the
time.
He has
different gigs and different things bring to town and showcases.
He just played a lot with Friedman. Tesla the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. He sat in for Frank.
Right.
Because
yeah.
Frank had an issue that pulled him away from the gig at the Ryman. And so, yeah, Sammy got to play.
So big ass shoes to just step in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be confident.
Oh, yeah.
To be like, yeah, sure, I'll do it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And he like, goes wherever Dave Friedman goes in terms of like promoting their products. Like,
yeah.
Speaking of, we went to LA. This was last year, I guess, now. Yeah. We did a demo with Sammy and Dave on that IRX.
Which is incredible. If you guys have, if you're into gear, man, that thing is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, Dave, all of his sounds are just so cool. Have you seen this IRX thing? It's a preamp pedal, basically, right? That comes with, I think, 10 slots for cab IRs, or you can run it like a power amp. But it is the tube preamp of,
one
of his amps. And so he's going to do the BB and, you know, other amps as well.
Wow. It's XLR out. It's kind of like a four, like a creation of like two note stuff. And then like Strymon has the Iridium.
Yeah.
Where it has cab simulations. You can use it, hook it up to your computer and tweak things there.
Yeah.
Resets. It's pretty versatile. I think it's $500.
It's so cheap. Yeah, it's like $500.
God.
But also, it's kind of like if you were not into modeling, like you are not, it kind of solves a problem that you can have real amp sounds on a pedal board, on a fly rig, or, you know, have a power amp, use that thing. And it sounded fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's $500.
Yeah.
So, and that's, I guess, the other the catch, because, you know, Friedman amps are not cheap.
No.
You know, you pay for, you get what you pay for.
No.
And to have those tonal capabilities for $500,
it's
just like sold.
When we went out there that demo and then we kind of talked to him, at this point they were still in R&D or finalizing stuff. And he kind of ballparked the price for us. We're like, okay. Yeah, maybe I can get Friedman.
You guys you know that obviously we see a lot of gear. We do NAMM every year. It's our entire jobs, but that bit of gear to me was like, oh, that sounds really great.
Yeah,
that was definitely a winner.
Speaking of new gear, you guys, we both filmed a demo with you, pedals. You guys did the Keeleys.
Yeah.
The three Keeley pedals.
Yeah.
The, what do we got here? Super Rodent, Blues Disorder, and the Angry Orange. And then you and I just recently did and posted this week the Dan Electro Nichols 1966 Fuzz.
Yeah.
So what were your thoughts on that?
Okay, well,
are those four?
Keeley first. I mean, I think that new line is just amazing because in fact, I did some late night, you know, geekery where I was A-B-ing stuff, and you know, distortion's the hardest thing to get right.
Mm.
You know, because you're going for that creamy natural amp distortion, which, you know, they're not all created equally, and it's such a moving target. And I'll have a pedal I'll love, and then I'll hate it. The thing is about these Keeleys is because you've got two different pedals in one, you've doubled your options. But then you can flip the flip how they are in the chain, or they're together, and so you get all these possibilities. And I was thinking last night, man, if you had two of these, you pretty much have all of, if you had the blue and the red, or the green and the
orange
and the gold or whatever, you would cover pretty much everything.
And it's kind of like that with the Screamer that you guys did previously a couple
months
ago.
Yeah, the Nobles.
It had like the kind of the standard true form of where it started than what Keeley would want. Or I think maybe he probably took player requests. I know Book was involved with that rollout. Maybe like that was kind of, but there's switches that change things.
Yeah. I did a session yesterday where I used the Nobles and I used it on my electric, and then I was doing an acoustic pass and I mic'd my guitar. And then I ran the out of it into my pedal board with that Nobles on with a little bit of like just heating up a little bit.
Sound good?
And oh God, it was amazing.
Huh.
And it totally like, so it kind of does everything. Yeah. I mean, just to show you the extreme, it actually worked for to make a weird, you know, acoustic kind of warm.
Look at you going Billy Strings and Trey Hensley in your
yeah, thing. Yeah,
right, pedal boards right. And acoustics.
Yeah, yeah, aside from the plane, yeah.
And then the Dan Electro fuzz that we thought, you know, there's tons of fuzzes out there, but I thought it was cool that they like revisited and recreated Steve Ridinger, the guy that started Fox pedals.
Right.
Or Fox Tone. Is it Fox Tone or Fox pedals? Either of the.
I think it was Fox Tone, yeah.
Those 70s pedals, and then bought Dan Electro in the 90s and, you know, revitalized that company. That was his first childhood design.
Wasn't that cool, the fact that
that was the first thing he ever designed.
Yeah, when he was like a teenager.
Oh, that's
he's
so cool.
He sold to his buddy in high school.
Yeah,
his buddy needed a fuzz, and he's like, I can build that.
Well, he heard Satisfaction.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which came out in 62.
He was like a guitar dude and an electronics enthusiast.
Yeah, and he had no schematic. He had nothing. And he figured out how to make this thing.
There was no Harmony Central back then.
Right, yeah. Right.
And they recreated it, and I thought it sounded great. What I loved about it, I'm not really a fuzz guy. That just isn't me. But it did give you that fuzziness. But you could dial it back and get a really nice rock and roll distortion or just a little bit of drive. It was very versatile, and I love the story behind it. Yeah. It was almost kind of like the way they brought it back from photos, like the Theodore that Gibson did.
Well, funny enough, that's on my list next because you guys did the video of the custom shop, kind of very limited. Like I think it was like 300
ago.
Pieces. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was
Theodore,
very expensive.
It was like $7,000, $6,000 or $7,000. Now they just did a full release. It's a standard part of their line, or at least currently for this year. It's coming in at $2,000. And the main differences I saw with that Theodore that came out is that the one that you guys tested was walnut and alder body. The new one is mahogany, probably obviously cutting down thing. Has a slim profile neck. The one that you guys tested had a thick
kind
C,
of a, yeah.
Chunky
old
C,
school.
It said.
Yeah.
The other things that I could pull that were differences were that it had the standard one comes with classic 57 humbuckers that just came out, the
oh,
standard
really?
One. And the one that you got were custom shop P90s.
Well, I would like to hear it with the humbuckers. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of that design and then also kind of its, I guess.
I loved it.
Like you know, peculiar sense of like the headstock looking like a hockey stick.
That was my favorite.
The
part.
The tulip double cut.
Because the headstock, you could see where
like the banana
Explorer.
Yeah,
yeah. Ted was already he already had the Explorer headstock worked out. He just didn't know where to put it.
Yet. Yeah.
And yeah, I love that. And I thought the guitar sounded great. You know, it was really fun. And it's interesting that in the new model. They're slimming down the neck, which, you know, those fat necks are not for everybody. I think my generation, the older generation, like them just because sentimentality. We like what we
remember,
felt
right.
As a kid or whatever. Or we'd like it to just be like a little harder. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the truth is, those thinner necks do feel way better. And I don't hear much of a difference in sound, so. I mean, if I can play it better, great. If it's great tone, but I can't play it, who cares?
Right,
yeah,
right. Good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the 57 humbuckers in it.
Oh, God,
versus the P90s.
Yeah, because those 57 humbuckers almost. I've got one in one of my Les Pauls, and it is so much like a big Tele, you know. It's kind of a lower wind and not super hot. And they've bright but not too piercing. I love them, man. I bet that's gonna be good.
I wonder what else they have lurking in their
the
archives
right.
of different drawings from Ted that they want to maybe possibly recreate or send down the AI generator and like here's the body he had. What would the full product look like?
Right.
And I'd be curious if they have any interest in chasing down any more designs.
That's what I really love.
Or
about.
Access to them because I think thing they kind of remade those original custom shop ones because they had somehow, I guess they were moving an old office or something. And came across the blueprints.
Stuff? Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There's an interesting story about this. There was all these files that. The former owner of Gibson was more forward-thinking, didn't want to look back. I think that was his thing, which is a huge mistake with a legendary company.
Well, legacy brands, yeah.
Yeah, a legacy bet. And apparently there were all these files that they'd had around forever, and they're like, just throw that crap away. And one of the employees thought, this is treasure.
Right.
And they stashed it all at the top of that building downtown. I can't remember where the old luthier shop was there, the Gibson's repair shop.
And had a showcase there for a long time.
Right. And I think Mark and some other guys just went through there painstakingly after work and dug through these files and found that.
Wow.
You know, and found a bunch of other stuff. So yeah, who knows what's going to come out? It's really cool what they're doing over there.
Yeah. It's archaeology.
Yeah,
it's cool.
It is.
You know,
it is.
I appreciate that stuff.
Well, another thing that came across my radar gear-wise was the Line 6 Catalyst combo amps, which is kind of leaned into the Tone Master lane of Fender and the Roland stuff. What's the Roland stuff that you've used downtown?
Katana
Boss
stuff. Katana, yeah.
My biggest thing is, obviously, everyone jokes about the Spider and the Line 6 Pod Express kidney bean thing. But the thing that I personally had against trying the Spider was it looked kind of corny. The Catalyst looks like a bona fide amp. It looks like it's a combo amp until you actually get in there. It has, I think, six to 12 amp models from the Helix kind of brain of the system.
Okay, gotcha. So it is Helix technology inside of this amp. That's
And then it has like 18 effects plus six specific reverbs, which I'm sure you'd love.
Sure.
Six different reverb types. And so it's not a full, you know, archive or library that the Helix provides or the HX Stomp. So it's slimmed down. It gets, you know, has a 112, I think a 212 combo package. But I think the 212 comes in 200 watts and it's only 26 pounds.
Ooh,
$499.
If it don't have the insane setting, I don't want it.
I was actually talking to a guitar player and they're like, I was talking about like the recreation and the kind of where Line 6 continues. I say, they're kind of, you know, they're messing up but not leaning into what they
Some of it, yeah.
With the insane.
You don't got to go full Rigs of Dad. However, hear me out, man. All right, so I was on tour once, I mean, this is maybe like early 2000s, and at the time I lived in a tiny apartment and I needed to learn a whole set of this other band's songs to do this tour, and I just couldn't make noise, man. And this kid in Jacksonville sold me one of those Line 6 Spider amps for like $50, and fuck if it wasn't handy, dude, because I could get really high gain at the time, you know.
Sure.
To get high gain you needed to crank a 5150. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it was $50. So just as a learning tool, I know people talk all kinds of smack, but man,
for sure.
Line 6 was so helpful for me to also like in my youth figure out what kind of delays I liked and what kinds of you know, different modulation effects were cool. You know, those big green pedals are you know,
cool.
I get that, like, you know, they have a Helix now and stuff like that, but I hope they, like you're saying, don't forget you know, the roots of like the DL4 and that.
I think of that because like one of the very first videos I did, and I ended up buying it because it was something I could afford and it allowed me to have a lot of sounds without having a lot of gear, was the Digitech RP500.
The little multi-effects
processor? Yeah, and it had the foot switch. And it was one of the first videos I did when I came to PG like 15 or 16 years ago. And I was like, wow, this is handy because it was allowing me to have all these sounds that I couldn't have. And so it's like, yeah, we talk shit on the modeling and it's corny and it looks cheesy and it's not tubes. But man, it when you're on a Lunchable like budget, it's way cooler than not being able to eat charcuterie. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather have that stuff where you can eat it and play it than like wishing I could have the finer meats from Italy. Yeah. It's like, nah, man, I want to play tone. I want to play guitar and have all these tones. And it was cool to have that RP500 for the years I had it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're Steve Vai, maybe you're not playing a multi-effects unit. But if you're a kid learning guitar in his bedroom, you probably are. And I think that's a good thing because you have access to, like you said, so many different tones and combinations. And, you know, that's how you develop your ear and your tastes and your style. And the music that you listen to might not be the music that you're great at playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So sometimes it helps to have a little inspiration from other weird places.
Well, Steve Vai does play many things, but included in his rig is an Axe FX, which again,
I can't
afford. We couldn't afford it, but I could afford an RP500.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. And there's
this Catalyst amp.
A notable difference between something like a Helix or an Axe FX.
But again, you get 6 to 12 amp models. You get about 18 effects with the reverbs included, and you got a powered amp, two speakers, and $500. Like a kid, as you would say, paper out, and a lawnmower, and a little bit of motivation.
Well, and you know, an amazing player is going to sound amazing on it.
Right.
That's,
it's a learning tool.
Right. Well, not only that, I mean, I you hear, you know, like, I was on, I don't know, TikTok or whatever, and I saw Ponomas had just he's just tearing it up. And then they follow the chord, and in the bathroom is this tiny little,
you like know, a honey tone?
Yeah, like some, well, I don't know what.
Big nose amp.
Some, yeah. Some little
a gorilla.
Crap, you know, not even that cool, you know,
yeah,
but,
yeah.
But something, some little crap amp, and it just, I mean crap, like a consumer grade
right.
toy, and yeah. It sounded amazing. And, you know, great players will sound great on whatever.
That's also what Nuno said at the end of his segment.
That was my favorite part.
Which I was like, I joked to him, I was like, you literally just cut what we do for a living and this whole rig rundown thing right at the knees. I was like, because if it doesn't matter, then we don't have a purpose of being on YouTube.
Yeah, he said, all the gear doesn't matter. It's all about
the
But he's right. That guy is, God, man. I mean, he would sound great on no matter what he plays.
Yeah. The last gear thing I had, and it's more of because I want to parlay this into a question, because you've written about it and we all probably have opinions about it, is Sinister Gates of Avenged Sevenfold came out with a new Schecter. It's an Avenger model. And it's nothing new in terms of like specs or anything or different pickups. It has, I believe it's a signature humbucker in the bridge. Maybe it's just something he picked from Duncan. And then a Sustainiac in the neck. But the thing that makes it different or relevant to news is that it's heavily distressed.
Ooh.
It's a heavy relic. There's less finish and paint on it than there is.
You know, oh, wow.
Yeah,
that bad.
Yeah.
Huh.
It looks like, I think Rory Gallagher had one of those strats, custom shop strats, that recreated his old strat that was main, or like one of SRVs that's basically wood, no finish. So I use that to ask you guys, what do you guys think in relic, fair or foul, relicing of guitars?
I mean, I think it's a little silly, you know.
You've written about it.
Yeah. I think it's a, you know, I don't know. It's like buying jeans with holes in them, you know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yourself.
My grandma never, she told me when that was a thing in the 90s, like if you did that, she would...
Yeah.
She'd lay the hammer down on me, buying distressed jeans.
It doesn't bother me.
I kind of like, I'm 50-50.
Here's my situation. If a guitar looks cool and it inspires you to pull it off the wall and play it,
play
it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's also, like, you know, there's highbrow arguments and there's lowbrow arguments for the relicing. The highbrow is like, oh, this is a Murphy Lab to look identical to this priceless guitar I don't want to take on the road. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's fair.
That's fair, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's the, fuck it, it looks cool. Like, you know, I don't know, like... I think some kids get into relicing because they have really shitty guitars and they want to scratch the head, the name of it is off of it, so they're not embarrassed to play it.
It's a different version or different way of putting like stickers.
Yeah.
That was a big thing, like a lot of people putting stickers on their guitars.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the difference is you're putting your own stickers on.
Yeah.
Other than a shop is doing it for you.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
How would you, not to single you out, but what I'd say, I buy a new guitar and I go home and relic it myself.
Oof. Yeah, well, you know, I think if you
then
just,
I'm at least putting.
Well, one thing I usually do is I
sand the neck.
I sand the neck just because I like that. I like the way the rod feels.
Totally.
I don't know if it's my greasy Italian heritage, but I does not work well with a heavily lacquered neck.
Interesting.
And so
it's got olive oil.
I got olive oil coming out of my skin. So
I think all I players like would agree that, like, you know, a heavy lacquer on the back of a neck gums you up.
Yeah.
Slows you down.
So I do that, and then I think if you do that, and then you put it in a gig bag and carry it around to gigs with you, and you know, play it, it will get some dents.
Yeah.
I never thought of the high and low brow of it. It's like when this is like a copied recreation.
Right. No one bats an eye when somebody drops 10 grand on a fucking relic.
Oh, I bat enough.
Yeah.
I might bat both of them.
Yeah.
Like a double take.
Yeah.
But no, that's true. Well, okay, we'll get into some more current event stuff. And this is an older topic, but I wanted to bring it up to throw you guys a question. So I don't know if you saw, maybe probably over a month ago, is that Paul McCartney had a bass returned to him from his Beatles day, the Hofner, one of the Hofner violin basses that he had gone missing or stolen. I don't know how the story goes, but I think it was a son of the father that found the instrument or owned the instrument. I don't want to blame him like he was the theft, but he had received it somehow, and his son came across and understood, made the connection to the great Beatle, and returned it to him. So I was curious if you had seen that story, and then if you guys had either any gear that you had gone that had returned to your life later in life, or maybe like a big gear regret, like an item that you lost that you kind of really wish you still had?
Well, I mean, a couple times I've been at like a friend's house or a studio and I've seen like one of my guitars. I'm like, hey man, I said, oh yeah, you left that here 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So at that point, do you ask for it back, or is it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, part of me is kind of like, well, golly, you could have told me. but yeah, that or, you know, I mean, that stuff happens. But that is a beautiful, remarkable story. It's like Peter Frampton's Phoenix.
Yeah. That's what it reminded me of, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? Any regrets beautiful. Or any things that you wish you could get your hands back on?
Nothing but regrets, Chris. I mean,
regrets.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I regret having to sell every amp I ever had to sell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even ones I never fucking played, because like years later, you might hear a song that inspires you to, like, you know, try to learn a riff or something. It's like, you know what? It'd sound perfect on that Mark IV I used to have. Damn, right. I missed that. Or what? You know, whatever. I had this Softec MIG 100H, and it was a one-trick pony, and that thing was falling apart because it was Russian, and the fucking input jacks were plastic and shit. I had to have all those replaced. Like, yeah. The thing was just a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And it only did one sound great, but man, do I miss that amp. Yeah, I should have never sold that.
It's funny because I know when we did the rig rundown, we've done two of them now with the dudes from All Them Witches. Parks has it in his bass rig.
And it always, that Softec? Yeah.
Yeah, and it always makes you kind of lust after your...
Yeah, I always look at it to see if it's scratched. Like, is it mine? Like, did he somehow, like, re-end up...
I remember that amp.
Yeah. Fucking missed that amp.
What about you in that... I know it's not the exact full circle thing because it wasn't the one that you once had, but it's the same make and model and year. It was the Vibroverb.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
was that your first amp or something?
Yeah. My parents, God bless them, were so sweet when I was, I guess I was like 15 or 14. I really wanted a real amp. And they went down to Hanson Music in Billings, Montana and bought me this Vibroverb. 64 Vibroverb for $100, which was a fortune.
Right, sure.
You know, I mean, it was like a struggle, and it basically formed my idea of what an amp should sound like for the rest of my life. And of course, I was an idiot,
do you remember what you traded it in on?
Yeah, I remember. I'm just embarrassed to say.
Here we go.
At the time, I traded it for a. It was old and cranky, but I traded it for a PV solid state bass head.
Tell me it was the 80s. It had to have been the 80s.
And it wasn't even for me. It was for my wife at the time, wanted to play bass. So I did that for her. And I mean, I took the speaker out. I took the old Jensen out and put in another crappy speaker and traded it.
They still got the better end of that deal, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And of course, then I spent thousands later rebuying one.
Yeah, and you recently got one.
Yeah. And it's you know, it's not what I remember, but it's a great amp. But, you know, but then again, power is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, the power coming out of my home back then was like, you know, 110 maybe. I don't know.
Tubes are a lot different now.
Yeah, now it's you know, it's like 130 coming out of the, and there's other stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, no, you can't buy it back. And it's not even what it is, you know. It's nostalgia, so.
Yeah.
Well, anything tripping you guys up, or not tripping you guys up, but exciting you about new music or anything? New albums that you've been listening to?
Oh man, that's a great question. It's funny for a dude who works in music like us, you know, I'm so busy with work. I rarely get the chance to really explore new stuff. But I don't know. The new Stretch Armstrong is kind of undeniable. If you're into hardcore and punk rock, it's great.
Do you still listen to Comeback Kid? Do they still, or you kind of just go back to the albums you enjoy? Because I saw that they're coming out with a new album.
They actually just released a new EP. I listened. You know, it's a. There are a handful of hardcore bands that have been doing it for, once you have been doing it for that long and you're still putting out great records, it's just staying power at this point. You know, like Comeback Kid gets better and better and better with every record. And sure, there are older albums that I still love to listen to, just like Every Time I Die.
Yeah.
Like for me, Radical was it. You know, like that was the best thing they ever released. You know, so yeah, I still listen to it, you know. Yeah, I'm in a place now where a lot of times if I am in the car for 20 minutes, I'm going to put on a record I know and love.
Yeah. You'll want a reconnection with an old friend. The two things that I saw that came across my radar is Gary Clark Jr. had his new album came out, which, a nod to you as a photographer, JPEG Raw is the album title. I don't listen to everything he's done because it's kind of like he's gone down different avenues that I haven't really connected with. And sometimes it's just like, oh, he put out two albums. I didn't even see they came out.
Right.
But this one, I came across my radar. I think it was maybe might have been New Radar or something with Spotify. And I was like, oh, shit, I'll give a spin to this. The record, I think, came out last week. I listened to it a couple times already. And it's really remarkable what he's doing. And again, not being attached to his last couple releases with the guitar, because he came out of Austin, so he's in the shadows right. of Eric Johnson and Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
And, you know, playing originally blues rock, blues-based music. And so that kind of puts him in a box. But now hearing where he's taking the guitar and the music that he's creating, it's very modern, but it's still guitar-based. It's still very rhythmic, and it has that R&B backing and spine. So that it's worth checking out if you've liked anything he's done before and you're a guitar fan. I think it's worth checking out. And the other thing I had was Charlie Crockett. He's got a new album coming out, $10 Cowboy and 426.
I'm excited for that, for
and
sure.
The song just dropped is Hard Luck and Circumstances. And he's, if you're not familiar, he's a great throwback to 1970s troubadour, honky-tonk, traditional country music. It's you would love it. You should definitely check it out. But Charlie
totally
Crockett.
Familiar. Okay.
It's so interesting to me, like the great divide in country music, because it seems to be really only country music, but it's either like you're listening to pop country, or you're kind of like us that are, you know, you love Sturgill and Jason, and like there's this underside of country music that really is pretty true traditional country roots music. That sort of thing. Lost Dog Street Band, for example. You know, the average, I think, you know, Kane Brown fan has no clue who the Lost Dog Street Band is. And it's like, you might actually enjoy some of these artists that, you know.
Yeah, there's almost a kind of a punk element to country music.
Yeah.
Like, Dwight Yoakam, when he couldn't get anything going on, he's playing, like, these kind of punk kind of shows in L.A. Because it's the only, it was, you know, the whole rockabilly thing was in there.
Sure.
He would work in there and there's always been that sort of thing that's real traditional and yet radical.
Sure.
Well, it's like a band that's, you know, now I wouldn't put them on the level of Dwight Yoakam, but Lucero, they got their start coming out of Memphis playing with like Clutch and hard rock bands because they couldn't fit into the shoe that was country western in Nashville. So they're like, hey, we're going to play with these rock bands because they'll let us open for them.
Right.
And that was like, that's kind of like why we love them.
Right. Oh. That's how we got our exposure to them. Yeah. And I do think, you know, at its core, the punk rock ethos and the working class American country mindset are not that far apart.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's blue collar.
It's totally, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Hard work and fucking drinking beers.
I'm down.
Oh, hey, there's one other thing. One thing I've listened to is, you know, Bonamassa and Glenn Hughes and Jason Bonham.
Was it Black Country?
Yeah,
Community.
They just came out of this. They've got a new record in there, and I think their new single is Free.
Is it cool?
God, it's so cool, man.
Who sings? Is Glenn the singer, or do they have a bona fide singer?
No, Glenn's a killer vocalist, man. That's what I love about this deal is that it's.
Oh, I mean, yeah, he's Deep Purple. But I didn't know if they had a standalone.
Oh, yeah.
Singer.
Yeah, he's and Bonamassa sings some of it. But what I love about it, man, it's what great collaborations are about because it brings something different out of Bonamassa. You know, he goes into a different lane. It's just really cool. And Glenn's just amazing. And very few people today are familiar with his work. You know, he's incredible. And I'm so glad he's out there. And you know, Bonham sounds like Bonham. So he does that thing, which is only that thing. And it's all you need.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's what everyone, a lot of drummers have kind of their reference point, and that's what they chase.
Right,
sonically or just stylistically.
Yeah, man, it's just a great, great bed, that great groove. So, yeah, that's some new music I'm excited about.
Well, we mentioned him a couple weeks ago. He's a friend and fan of the Rig Rundown. Be worth mentioning in this news bit. Before we move on to other things, is Marcus King has a signature product coming out.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
It's called the Signature Weed Carolina Honey.
Yeah, Carolina Honey.
So it's like...
he's
going, a strain of weed.
Yeah. Well,
you know what? So many celebrities are doing it. Good on him.
Hey, Marcus. Yeah. Bring some samples to your next rundown, Marcus.
We'll review.
Yeah.
If you want a review on PremierGuitar.com, we'll shoot a video of it for sure.
What's this thing? I think we'll give a head. Yeah, we'll roast and toast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a new thing I wanted to include because of we all are on YouTube in some form or fashion, is calling out content creators that we enjoy or that we follow. And I want to start off with Zach Wish. He is a guy that actually does videos for us, and he's great at what he does. He really thought out what he wants to do when it comes to gear demos and how he wants to display the piece of gear. He wants to make everything sound the best it can. He has a day job, so everything you see on his YouTube channel and for us is essentially a hobby. And so he does everything himself, films it, records it, edits it, because his day job is in that kind of realm of doing photography and video stuff.
Right.
So like his day job is meddling around with cameras, so he kind of applied it to his passion for guitar playing. And and a recent reason, like I'll give you an example why I do love Zach for not just only him contributing to PG, but his breadth of what he will put into a video. He did this JCM 800 clone by Gosh Sound, and he included White Zombie, Less Than Jake, Rancid, Power Trip, Mr. Big, and Led Zeppelin and AC/DC as reference points of like riffs he included in the
video. The sounds of
yeah.
That
app. That's cool. And I even emailed him when he submitted the video and I watched it back. I was like, dude, you just slide into my Spotify like random playlist because like those are all like in there.
That's funny.
Yeah, so it just goes to show the way that he understands like it wants to show off a piece of gear, and he will, if something's heavy, yeah, he'll do the heavy thing, but he'll also incorporate, like he used the Zeppelin song was 10 Years Gone, which is not a heavy song. It's a jangly bit.
And that's cool.
Yeah, so he's really great. And I want to give him a shout out. I hope I don't step on toes or, you know, anything he doesn't want out there, but he does so well online that, I don't know if it was Instagram or YouTube or whatever, but someone in the SEAL camp reached out to him.
SEAL
is
the
artist. Yeah. Is it Tears from the Rose? Kiss from the Rose. Batman Returns, I think it was.
Yeah.
Anyways, and he's part of SEAL's band now.
Holy shit.
Yeah, because of his content he put out there. And
hey,
then
good
he went out to LA and rehearsed, and he's been traveling the world on these gigs with SEAL.
That's
it's
so
part
sick.
Of SEAL's band, yeah.
I love that.
That is fabulous.
Yeah, so like not only, you know, I'm not trying to toot his own horn too hard, but yeah, honk honk. And it shows like if you can do some good stuff, you'll get seen and heard.
Yeah, it's a good affirmation for sure.
You know, it's like we were talking about in the beginning, how like the candy rat stuff, you know, before there's always been gatekeepers that will essentially determine what the general public gets to hear. You know, you gotta get a record deal and get it out there.
You gotta find the right radio guy to play your shit.
Yeah. And
homes.
Now, like a kid in, you know, in Mumbai.
He's in Virginia.
Yeah, or Virginia can borrow a cell phone and play guitar and millions of people can hear it.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful, man. I love that it's all out to share and it can go anywhere from there.
And to go to your Sammy Buller point, he's the kindest dude. He's the coolest. He's just
super sweet guy.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So the closing topic this week I pulled up based in Tennessee is that the Elvis Act was signed in, which is kind of goes against name, image, and likeness, kind of with the college sports athletes are dealing with, where they're able to monetize their likeness and commercials and stuff that they can do for within, you know, the confines of making money that now is legal for them. Is that, I guess, Governor Bill Lee put in something where is protecting the rights of songwriters and musicians and singers to be able to perform and not and kind of block out AI. So it's the industry first. And so I wanted to get your guys' take on what you think the future is with AI. And before we do that, to let you ponder real quick, I want to give a couple quotes to Rick, because Rick Beato, Uncle Rick we'll call him, who we love and, you know, check out his content, obviously, so he doesn't need a plug from us. But he had two quotes I'll read quickly. It's people, companies, whether it's Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Warner Music, are going to have all their own AI-generated music. Those are the downside. Who's going to hold up copyright on it? What are the songs that the models are going to be trained on? I believe in the future, you'll go to an Apple Music store or Spotify, you'll see the Beatles, and next to it, the Beatles AI, Led Zeppelin and Led Zeppelin AI. But he goes on to say, on the positive side, is one of the benefits is in display is the new Beatles song they did with Now and Then, where they are able to separate John's voice from the piano track from that demo, where they're able to extract his voice and better EQ
without
it in the
artifacts.
Song. Yeah. And so that was a positive. And he says, notice in some of the Spotify contents I do that there's a lot more country songs, more rock songs, more songs with organic instruments like guitar and less auto-tune, less programmed music that's going into popular music that's being received well by listeners. So again, what is your thoughts on AI and the future of music and songwriting? And where do you personally maybe want to engage with our robot overlords?
Well, I mean,
kindest sense possible, because I know that's your kind of trajectory.
Yeah, sure, sure.
You want to be ambivalent to them?
Well,
you know, kind?
I think the first question is, are we AI? You don't know. I mean,
is this a simulation?
Well, yeah, is everything
blue or red pill? Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
I always use please and thank you with Alexa and Siri just in the off chance that it becomes sentient and wants us dead.
Please and thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that.
But you're more involved. But you record. You still do gigs.
Yeah.
So it's like that AI thing that.
No, man. I think playing music is a reward. That's the reward we give ourselves. And if you can make some money on it, fabulous, great. There's always going to be people that want to hear people play music, you know, even play it badly. You know, if I can't hear a great band, I love hearing a terrible band.
Yeah.
So AI, you know, AI is where it's going. You know, I think we're witnessing the infancy of a superior species. Mm-hmm. And really, all joking aside, it's that whole Descartes thing. I think, therefore, I am. We don't know if we are AI or not.
Yeah.
There's no telling.
Have you used it or incorporated it into anything you're doing creatively?
Okay. Here's what I did do. I write this column for PG, and I've been doing this for like ever. For 15 years.
Yeah.
I don't know how long. And so I have to come up with something new every month, and it's like a term paper. So
just sweating it out.
Oh, just sweating it out, man. So one time I just fed a bunch of these rough ideas into some stupid AI program and said, okay, give me something. And it wrote a bunch of things that sounded, it was not something I could use. It was interesting. But I think ultimately, you know, humans will like what humans create and will like what AI creates. And I think AI will like what humans create because it's flawed and there's some beauty in our mistakes.
What about you? Do you have any?
I'm like so torn on the whole issue for a couple of reasons. You know, artificial intelligence came out a couple of years ago or whatever, and you know, at first it was like the images. It'd be like, here's Donald Trump with 27 fingers. It's like, okay, that looks totally dumb. But it's getting so good now that a dude just won an international photo contest with an AI photo. Once he was awarded the award, he said, yeah, hey, just so you know, I used AI to create that. Like, you got fooled. Because that's the whole thing, right? Like, can we tell the difference? So right now, sure, I've heard AI music that's like, oh, that sounds like music.
you know what I mean? Like, I guess it's right. Technically qualifies.
Yeah, but what scares me is when and if it gets to a point that we can't tell. That's terrifying to me because there obviously, you know, is huge propensity for somebody to take advantage of that situation. I guess I look at it like this. If I'm a photographer, right, and my objective is to create a beautiful image, if I do that using AI, I think in that instance is cheating.
Yeah.
But if I'm a visual storyteller and I'm trying to tell a story and I use AI as a tool, because let's face it, we created it. It is a tool until we're its tool. You know what I mean? But like, I think if it can be used responsibly, even in a creative context. But yeah, the days when AI just makes, I'm not going to be waiting outside of FYE for the next AI record. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, so I can only imagine, you know.
I wonder what the learning curve will be in its, where it gets first, because it's like my thought when I think of AI performing is like when I used to go to Chuck E. Cheese as a kid and seeing the robot band there hammering away on some tunes.
Yeah.
Will it be the songwriting part of? Because at least, especially with English, syntax is such a thing that's so tricky that it might be able to conjure up lyrics, or will it be easier for it to create instrumentation in instrumental music, similar to something like you put it in the, you know, give me something similar to Bach or Mozart or Eddie Van Halen.
It's so weird because
versus like trying to actually write a song that would make sense, because I've seen AI spit out text and it's not great yet.
Sure.
But other times it can be like this beautiful haiku, you know? Yeah. That's the thing about...
That's the weird part.
Yeah, and I think that...
It's like really, baseball, though. You know, 3 out of 10 is pretty good.
Right. and I think it's you know, as humans, we interpret whatever we see, whatever we take in, whatever we read, it goes through the filter of our own experience. And so whatever it shows us might at some point, for whatever random reason, really connect with what we need to hear. So I don't know. It's just more stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, I don't know if I'll be waiting in line for the...
Yeah. The next AI Beatles record or whatever.
Or I'll be the jackass that is and didn't realize it was an AI.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's just that we don't know what's going to happen with all of this. Yeah. How, you know.
Although, you know what? Your image and your voices are so out there that they could create a version of
Ben, one of our graphic dudes, Ben. He's definitely shown me some stuff that he can do with AI and me. So it's been great to see that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah. The deep fake thing is going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I was going to say, weird, deep, like peanut gallery comment is, we're talking about this in future tense, and it's already here.
Yeah, it's here.
We're already consuming content. And there's music that's already AI generated stuff.
Sure.
We don't know what guitar leads and stuff are. We don't know.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. We just don't know. On one hand, Sports Illustrated switched to some AI articles and they shut the doors. That was one of the biggest magazines granted, the print magazine industry is, you know, in decline. But as of now, I think as far as writing, most people can see through it. You know, it's clickbaity.
I agree. Yes.
And also the human experience is so intrinsically human.
Yeah.
You know, you can maybe program it to respond or react to how we would expect a human reaction or response, but at the end of the day, it's just not.
It's one of those things where it's like an old Beatles record or when All Them Witches recorded at Abbey Road. They're one of the songs that opens the song that opens the album. You can hear a door closing. So I don't know if AI can put that in there, or a missed beat, or a ghost note, or it's like, I don't. That's where it's almost like our ability to create errors and be, you know, problematic at being excellent is almost endearing. It makes us actually more relatable than what AI could create.
Right. Or would it understand why it's cool? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's this band called Recover. It's one of my favorite bands of all time. They have this record called Sessies Nespas Recover. And on one of the tracks, right before it starts, you can hear the drummer cough. And it's just like one of those moments in that record where it's like, fuck yeah, that's real.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, this guy is probably out of breath, probably coughing a little bit because he's tracking an album.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
Could AI throw in a garbage truck beeping outside? Sure.
Yeah,
but would it understand why it would be cool or not? No.
Yeah. I think that's where I don't. At least that's where I end up on the equation. I think it can do a lot of things great, and it probably can, you know, do most things better than us. But it can't screw up like humans, and that's what we're good at.
Well, and I think like the images that it creates. I think the ones that really get people's attention are the mistakes.
Yeah.
The ones
with the weird.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of don't make any sense. It's like, oh, I like that.
Well, that's bizarre.
So, you know. Yeah.
Bring it on.
Yeah, bring it on. I love it.
Fellas, I think we got stuff to do
that's
more important than us just yakking. So thanks again. If you got any questions or comments you want to leave behind, we'll respond and react to them. Do that so in the comments below.
Yeah, also, hey, what are your thoughts on AI? Because I think this is something that we need to probably start focusing on now that it is actually a part of our everyday life, you know.
Gentlemen, till next time.
Later, buds.